If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. Propaganda versus the truth. You're with Swedish-British journalist Pelle Neroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome to the Pelle Neroth-Taylor Show on this Tuesday afternoon in Europe. We've got four excellent guests today, so stick around. Our first guest is a returning Tim Rivers, who reminds us of the political prisoners held after January 6th, a few days after Trump said he will make these political prisoners a mainstay of his election campaign. Our second guest is Mats Nilsson, a Swedish writer and commentator and frequent guest here. He's an expert on Scandinavia and, of course, this once peaceful region's close neighbors, the Balts, the Lithuanians and Estonians, seem to be geeing up for World War III by saying the Russians' nuclear weapons can be safely ignored. On to the second now, we've got Eric Krauss, a French former investment banker, who will tell us what's going on in President Macron's mind. Is his stance on sending troops to Ukraine and starting World War III serious, or is it just domestic politics? Well, we hope it's the latter. Finally, we've got Danny Bamping, a YouTube commentator and politician from Plymouth in the UK, who will tell us about Brexit interrupters. Are the Brits stuck in their version of the Trump revolution, as it were, or is it all going well? Anyway, that's all for the first 2 hours of this excellent show, and we hope that you will listen to as much of it as possible. We're just going to segue over to Asia for the moment. I'd like to talk about China and research there amid all this talk about limiting TikTok to Western users and various restrictions that the Americans are trying to insist on. And I won't talk about that directly because the mainstream media have done so, and you can find out a lot about this. But I want to talk about an experience I had looking on the internet, on Twitter, and I found this beautiful Central European city, which almost looked like an AI version of a city because it was almost empty of people and it was empty of garbage, there's empty of tourist tat, empty of postcard stalls, empty of homeless people, empty of gypsy fiddlers, empty of McDonald's, everything. It was eerie, and it looked like Prague or something. And then there was another picture in this series, and it looked like a big Central European castle. And then there was the familiar Charles Bridge, and then lo and behold, there was the Radcliffe Camera in Oxford. So obviously it could be Europe, it had to be a composite of Europe. And what it was the Huawei Chinese company's latest research center. Believe it or not, they have 100,000 people on their research and development payroll, of whom the 25,000 luckiest ones are living in a mock-up of a European city with bits taken from about 10 or 12 European centers and placed next to each other. So you can walk from Prague 1 minute down the cobbled streets of that beautiful city and suddenly find yourself in Oxford. And then you're on to Bruges, and then you're on to Heidelberg Castle, and then you're on the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris, where they've housed their place of one of their main research libraries. And then it's staffed by the 25,000 Chinese brainiacs working there, and it's packed with cafes and various sort of research sort of meeting places, but sort of subtly and inside the building. So it doesn't look as if, you know, it's tatty or anything. It's very stylish. Apparently they're direct copies. There's even a Versailles palace there. And I kid you not, just Google it, Oxhorn Center. It's outside Shenzhen in southern China, and it's real. It's not AI. It's not Hollywood or anything like that. I mean, America has Las Vegas pyramids and things like that for people who gamble, but this is for people who are going to take on the West and take us to the cleaners, technologically speaking. So I recommend you look at that because it's just a sight. The Huawei are doing very well in research terms, and I just thought I'd worry you a little bit. They've rolled out 5.5G. And the Americans said to the Arab Emirates, are coming, the whole of the central, the Gulf states are kind of giving up on their radical Islam, it seems, and I heard that from other sources, and kind of going with the technological flow and setting themselves up very wisely, in my view, as being 21st century innovators. And in other words, they're going down the China route. And they chose China's 5.5G, and the Americans said, well, you know, you can't get our F-35 jet fighters. And the Arabs said, well, okay, fine, bye. So the Americans lost that, and they're rolling out 5.5G in the Middle East. They've also got 5.5G in their coal mining and distribution. We know that Chinese are very big on coal mining, and that is leading to intelligent mining, whatever that means. It's turbocharging the use of autonomous vehicles, and the network speeds at this are 6 gigabytes per second, which is like 100 times higher than what you use on the current internet access, like this channel, for instance. While Apple Car is dead in the water after 10 years and billions of dollars, the Americans are despairing about that. Huawei is still on for their electrical car scheme, which I talked to guests about that before, and the Chinese remain very serious about that. Well, what are the Americans doing? Well, their Boeing is doing badly. A lot of their equipment is falling off the planes. And a Boeing whistleblower, John Barnett, who's going to tell us all the secrets of what's going on really behind the scenes in the American flagship company, he was found dead in his car with a gunshot wound to his head just before he's about to testify against Boeing. So, you know, here we are focusing on the Russians killing all sorts of people, but this looks as if this guy was suicided, because why was he commit suicide? I mean, suicide didn't mean he was murdered. The day before he was going to testify, this was a man with a mission. What secrets will, we don't know. But Elon Musk, in his forthright way, is talking about Boeing's failures due to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and the men in suits taking over and kicking out the good engineers and replacing it with incompetent people who tick all the ethnic boxes. So, you know, that's the problem. We're going downhill. But I'm sure there'll be pushback on that. That's a very simple summary. And of course, Chinese is behind in some respects, and America is fantastic superpower technologically, but maybe that's the way things are going. And I'm very happy to debate that with future guests. But we'll end on that note, and we will go on to a very quick news break. And then we've got our friend Basil Valentine, the political editor, to tell us about other events going on since we last spoke. This is TNT Radio, back after a break.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay. Welcome back to the TNT show. Pelle Neroth-Taylor here. We've got Basil Valentine, our political editor, who's been scouring the news and got some interesting things for us today. Basil, how are you?
As always, Pelle, yes, good to be with you. And hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. This first story sort of comes on the back of Michael Gove's attempts to redefine extremism and limit our democratic rights to say what we like one way or another. And now caught up in this web is Reform UK, the party to which Gove's only recently departed colleague Lee Anderson has departed. Richard Tice, the leader of Reform UK, says it is defamatory and libelous to call his party far right. He's claimed that the BBC apologised for using the phrase to describe the party in an article at the weekend, primarily about the Liberal Democrats conference. BBC said in an article about the Liberal Democrats spring conference, we wrongly described the political party Reform UK as far right when referring to polling. This sentence was subsequently removed from the article. Nevertheless, that doesn't stop commentators from calling Reform far right. It's a term that was bandied around a lot during the whole COVID farrago to describe people who wanted to maintain personal bodily sovereignty and not allow themselves to be subjected to experimental injections. For some reason, that got you labelled as far right. You can also be labelled as far right for raising objections to unlimited immigration, for example. Now far right, far left, these terms have become almost meaningless. The far right used to be associated with authoritarianism more than anything else. Far right equals fascism, far left equals communism. But we're seeing the real fascism come from the neoliberal fake center, which isn't actually centrist at all, but is pro-war and pro-censorship.
I agree totally. I hate this word far right. I mean, I hate it as much as I hate the word conspiracy theorist. Because, I mean, I spread. I even hate the word. But, you know, a lot of the things we call conspiracy theories are unfortunate events that are true and are carried out by bad actors like the deep state and so on. There are conspiracy theories out there, things that didn't really happen, but they're mixed up. So, you know, the Earth is round, right? You know, I think we've landed on the moon. I do think climate change is happening, although the man-made aspect can be exaggerated. But I mean, Kennedy was killed by a kill team, not by Lee Harvey Oswald. But they mix these things up. And so, but saying you're a conspiracy theorist elevates ignorant people to a position of authority, and it's a status yes. thing, right? And far right is exactly the same thing. And you're saying, well, you're an extreme. You're not part of the tribe because we're social creatures and we don't want to be outside the tribe. It's so deeply ingrained into our genetics, you know. It's especially used by women who don't want to talk about things. They say, he's a far right. But as you say, a far right person is a person who's almost libertarian, and that was not anti-authoritarian, as in during the COVID crisis. How could people who wanted fewer restrictions be called far right, you know? Or a lot of the people are called far right, like the AfD in Germany and the Sweden Democrats, and I don't know what it is in the UK, but let's say Le Pen's party in France. They want peace in Russia. I thought the far right were the people who wanted war all the time, fascists, you know, to destroy the weak. And here we have, they're the softies, the far right, who want to talk to the other side because they realize that, you know, the dangers of world war, you know. So it's meaningless, you know. But it's just a shorthand for, we don't have to bother you with the details. We're just painting this title on someone. And it's no different from the way that, you know, the Chinese, we used to mock Chinese language during the Cultural Revolution, the capitalist pig dog or whatever they called it. And then say, oh, the bourgeois revisionists, what the Soviets used. And we can laugh at that. And that's what they used. But we're doing the same thing now, aren't we?
Yeah, I agree. It's symptomatic of the deterioration in our political discourse, just like the use of the suffix denier when describing some yeah. contemporary events. So you have so-called climate deniers, COVID right. deniers, etc., yeah, right. which basically means you take a different opinion. And these terms really undermine liberal democracy. Conspiracy theorist and conspiracy theory, which you refer to yeah. there, was, of course, famously introduced into the lexicon by the CIA in the late 1960s in order to discredit people who questioned the findings of the Warren Commission report. Very successful it has been too, but it's ultimately an anti-intellectual, anti-academic term that's, you know, very effective at corralling people back into following establishment narratives, because it sounds a bit kooky to be a conspiracy theorist. In fact, all you're doing is looking for the truth. I mean, to the extent, Paddy, these days, that even that word has been tainted. You know, people now talk about, oh, he's a truther, as right. if it's a bad thing to be somebody who wants to know the truth about historic events. But the term
isn't truther also associated with white supremacy and even yes. I mean, logic and mathematics, they're white sciences. And obviously I as you learned that was I did maths at university because I thought, well, a maths equation is the same on the other side of the universe. There's something beautiful and frightening about that. You know, physics is the same across the universe. It's universal. That's precisely with language as contingent. But now, you know, that's regarded with as a tool of oppression. And of course, if you would do away with logic and argument and all those things, then you just, I think we talked about this, you just end up opposing each other, and violence and intimidation became the only means of having contact with another person if you can't persuade them using universal rules. Anyway.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, you know, you don't get more extreme or more far right than genocide, do you? Do you know
yeah,
what I
right.
mean? So,
yeah.
And yet the so-called community secretary, Michael Gove, is a keen supporter of the genocide in Gaza, yet right. he's seeking to define others as extremists, people who want an end to the slaughter. It's absolutely right. inverted. It really is.
Yeah.
Political scientists, Cass Munder, in his book, The Far Right Today, argues that the far right divides into two categories: an extreme right, which, and I quote, rejects the essence of democracy, that is popular sovereignty and majority rule. Well, I don't think that applies to Reform UK or, frankly, any other group of any meaningful size, or indeed any prominent individuals, certainly in Britain. And then he's got another definition of far right, which is the radical right, which, and I quote, accepts the essence of democracy, but opposes fundamental elements of liberal democracy, most notably minority rights, the rule of law, and the separation of powers. Well, again, you know,
that's nonsense.
Radical, isn't it?
Because there's always a clash between rights. I mean, the right to privacy and the right to freedom of speech. So social rights to welfare and the right not to be intervened in by the government. So that's just rights roughshod over all established political philosophy. I'm sorry, Basil, we've got to go on to my first guest, but we'll carry on this discussion. Incredibly interesting. Thank you very much, political editor Basil Valentine, talking about how the far right term has been misused and abused. Anyway, this is TNT Radio, and we're on to our first guests.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, climate agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism, or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Pelle Neroth Taylor Show. We've got our first guest, who is a returning guest called Tim Rivers, who's the author of the American Gulag Chronicles. He's a retired IT engineer, Fortune 100 executive and writer. And in 2021, as viewers will know, who've watched me for a while, he began writing letters of support to January 6 prisoners and documenting their stories and messages to supporters around the world. Together with Mary Goodwin, J6 mother and activist, they created J6 Patriot News. You can find it on X, telling America up-to-date information about the state's mistreatment of these patriots and how they can help. In 2022, he founded the American Gulag Chronicles and began publishing the letters, art, and stories of America's political prisoners to the general public. Welcome to the show, Tim. How are you?
That's great. I'm great. Thank you for having me back this morning.
Yeah. I mean, your accounts last time has really shook me up, actually, because it's so unlikely. It's not what we associate with America at all, you know. But I thought that we've got a news angle to your appearance, which is the fact that Trump seems to be taking up the case of these over 100 political prisoners held in isolation for up to 3 years without trial and in very bad conditions, almost like the Soviet Union, you know. And he's going to make that part of his electoral campaign. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I think that's a response to what many of us in the community have been doing. I mean, don't doubt that we've been writing letters to President Trump because we still consider him to be part of any solution that brings America back to center. And those letters have been coming, you know, have been striking home. And we've just started on a new project called Letters to Trump, which is letters from political prisoners directly to Mr. Trump. We're trying to prepare for day one of a new administration in this country. We're hoping that it will be an administration that's favorable. But if it is, on day one, we do not want to begin trying to figure it out. And so there is now a J6 pardon project that's being brainstormed in Washington, D.C. to prepare a document, basically a guideline on how and what can be done for January 6 prisoners who've been wrongfully accused and convicted of these things. And it's a very difficult effort, because once you've been indicted in America, you are in you enter this conveyor belt process of justice. And when it works, it's wonderful. And when it doesn't work, it's a meat grinder. And we've seen it, you know, now for 3 years, we've seen what happened when it doesn't work. So President Trump warmed to the idea, I think, over a year ago when the J6 Choir project came out. I think everybody could see that he understood what was going on, and he was trying to be supportive in a way that did not ruin his political aspirations for this year. And I think now he's finally felt firmly enough, having won the primary, having basically restructured the RNC, which is our Republican National Committee. I believe now he feels it's safe to declare his intention to right these wrongs. And believe me, the community is just waiting for it. But we also understand that there must be Plan B. And so we are preparing, just like anybody else, for the eventualities. But our hope is that Plan A goes perfectly.
Well, I mean, presumably he can't you've got separation of the powers and all that. Does he have executive power to pardon these people, or does he have to go through the courts? And is it a complicated process?
No, there are many types of pardons. There are pardons of innocence. There's pardons of legality. There's many different types. And you can think of many people, famous people, who have been given pardons in the past, right, to give them a pass. There's also something called injunctive relief. When a wrong has been done to justice, there are ways to immediately seek relief for people, release them, give them some type of certitude of citizenship back while this process goes through. I think most of us, we have our eyes on the Supreme Court right now. There's a major case is coming up, which is the 1512C obstruction of an official proceeding. This is the one that is landing people with 10 to 20 year prison sentences. And it is being, most of us believe it's being used wrongfully, that it's not, that's not the interpretation of the law. And that if there were a correct interpretation, it would be all the lies and the destruction of records that the January 6th committee willfully created. That is actually a real violation of 1512C. But if SCOTUS overturns that, you're going to knock the underpinnings out of the biggest teeth that the DOJ has had. And parallel to that, you've already had appeals courts overturning these ridiculous sentencing enhancements, which is affecting hundreds of J6ers, some of them, fortunately, who have already served those enhanced sentences. And then you also have the challenge to change of venue, because I think most of us understand that the high degree of guilty verdicts and plea deals that they have manufactured in D.C. has everything to do with the justice environment there and the demographics of the inhabitants of that district. A change of venue would be significant.
That's brilliant. And I'm just summarize very quickly, because not everyone has watched my show, previous show, or know your case. But basically, we can remember the pictures of J6 people wandering around like tourists when the Capitol was opened, and then serving very long sentences. And amazingly, you know, some of these people have been held without trial, and those who went to trial were served very long sentences for what is, you know, a trivial tourist activity, you know, and not violent at all. But I just quote two quotes from your book, because a lot of people, I think yourself included, think that the FBI were very, very, or someone in the deep state, Washington being the regime change capital of the world, did a regime change, as it were, against Trump by discrediting the Trump supporters by creating a provocation and opening up the Capitol and then using violence to discredit all the peaceful Trump supporters who'd come out to protest what they believed, and accurately, I think, was a stolen election, you know. So turn the table on a stolen election, which benefited Biden, and turned Trump into a kind of demonic figure. So we've got Joseph Padilla on the September 18, 2021, who at the time had been detained 7 months without bond, who writes, despite what you might have heard on mainstream media, the Capitol riot was instigated by the Capitol Police and other law enforcement agencies. There's an insider writing to you and talking about those things. We've got Jeff McKellop. As a political prisoner in 2019, I'm a political prisoner. In 2019, I joined the Army, 101st Airborne, 2nd Ranger Battalion. We are being held in a communist land of Oz. The cells, black mold comes from the air vents. Human fecal matter smashed under and around the beds and in the corners. I ask for bleach, none. This is my punishment for serving my country for almost 30 years. So these are the innocent people who are demonstrating for democracy, not doing anything violent, who are locked up on these bogus charges. The United States in the 2020s. Anyway, we're just going to go into a quick news break and carry on talking about this. This is TNT Radio. On to a quick news break.
Today's News Talk Radio.
We do have some big news.
What is it?
Yeah, what is it?
What is it?
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. We're being warned to brace for an avalanche of new deaths in Gaza, not from combat, but rather starvation. The White House is refusing to admit whether it's still working with social media companies to censor speech it doesn't like. And the internet has been set alight after footage emerged of former US President Barack Obama paying a surprise, unannounced visit to British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak in London.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Welcome back to the Pelaneros Taylor Show. We've got Tim Rivers with us, who's written a book and is an activist for all the January 6th protesters who were wrongly jailed for protesting against what is widely regarded in some circles as being a stolen election on trumped-up charges. And Trump is going to make that one of the centerpieces of his campaign to get these people free. And Tim Rivers has been talking about that before the break. All the various legal measures, we're taking it to the Supreme Court and so on. I've been following your X account and your website, which I recommend everyone to follow, actually. And you mentioned Ron McAbee, which seems to be an outrageous case of a guy who was helping a woman who's being slowly suffocated, and he got swept up and is now a prisoner. He's been sentenced for almost 6 years in jail. Can you just talk a bit about that case? Because it's outrageous.
He's a really amazing person. He's a former sheriff's deputy, part of law enforcement. He was there that day for his own personal beliefs and patriotism. And he observed somebody being abused, basically life-threateningly abused. And he did what any law enforcement agency officer would do. He came to the rescue and tried to save them. It didn't really matter, I believe, in this case that it was fellow law enforcement who were actually putting this person in jeopardy. The fact of the matter is it was a defenseless, unarmed woman who was basically dying at the hands of law enforcement, and he attempted to save her. This is the same story. You mentioned Jeff McKellop, same thing. Jeff rescued a senior woman, a very senior citizen, who was being beaten and sprayed, totally defenseless, no way to escape, no place to go to. Again, Jeff stepped in to try and stop that. He's sitting in Dallas-Fort Worth prison right now, over 3 years, no trial. And so that's what makes most of us activists anymore. I think that's one of the things that we see is you knock down one person who stands for freedom and righteousness, 10 more rise up in their space. You took out Jeff McKellop. You took out Ron McAfee. Now you got Tim Rivers and David Sumrall to deal with. Take us out. There'll be people behind us. Because liberty is not something that dies easily, Pele. Certainly not in this country, where it is a staple of American belief. And it will take a lot to destroy this country, but much has been damaged.
Well, I mean, it sounds absolutely unbelievable, but this guy, McKellop, what was he, prosecuted for, or did that case never go to trial? I mean, what did the feds say that he'd done wrong? You know, I mean, saving a life isn't a criminal act, is it?
Long list of charges, long list of charges, you know, obstructing, again, the obstructing a proceeding, the using force on a police officer. They magnify that like six different charges that really mean the same thing. But the content is to put as many charges on the docket as possible so they can force you into an irrevocable plea deal that basically obviates any possibility of an appeal. Right. So you're guilty. They've got a huge win with these plea deals because they threaten you with 20, 30, 40 years in prison. Oh, you take the plea deal, you're going to get off with 1 year probation, blah, blah, blah. But you have to plead your sins to Biden. You have to confess that MAGA is an evil thing and that Donald Trump is the devil incarnate. I mean, it's ridiculous behavior. It is absolute third world dictatorship behavior, Stasi tactics on law enforcement and justice. And I'm just shocked that I see this in my lifetime in my country, but I'm also driven to stop it, to restore some sanity to the American landscape. I'm sorry, I have children, grandchildren. I have a wife. I have people I care about who will stay and outlast me. And this is not fair to leave this burden for them. This is why I urge every American to get involved, because that's what being an American means. Just like, you know, everybody has a loyalty, a fealty to their country. And they come to its aid when it's needed. Now in America, that fealty is needed to restore some sanity in our government. I just voted today. I was appalled. My wife and I were the only people in the voting poll and the only people in the polling place. Yes, Donald Trump has already won the Republican national nomination. There'll be no unseating him. But yet the optics of that says a lot about the apathy or perhaps the fear of the American public right now.
Sorry, what were you voting for? Was it a primary or something that he thought?
Yes, it was a Republican primary here in Florida. And we only actually there were seven people on the ballot, six of whom had dropped off already, but yet they remained on the ballot. And if you voted for them, their vote counted. And these are the things that are disturbing about the American electoral process now.
I'll talk a little bit more how to avoid another election steal. But just to go back to this McKellip guy. But he did a plea deal, but he's still in jail after 3 years. So
no plea deal. He refuses a plea deal. Oh, that's why he's still in jail. But here's the thing. Mr. McKellip is a special forces veteran. He was a Ranger and a Green Beret, served his full tours of duty, 20 years, and did multiple deployments in what we call ODAs, as Operational Detachment Alpha. Think SEAL team, but Green Beret. And basically three bronze stars for valor. This man is an American war hero. I'm sorry. He's an American war hero. And he worked for the State Department for a number of years as a protectorate for politicians and important people in very dangerous places. Never been arrested in his life. And here he sits in a prison 3 years later. He and I communicate almost daily. He is unbroken. He is still a Christian, still a firm believer in his right as an American to what he did that day. And refuses to take the knee. And that's why he does not have a trial. That's why they do not want him to testify. That's why he has so many charges that a plea deal would be mercy.
Tim, one of the things that us on our side of the pond, I mean, we're very supportive. I'm very supportive. I know lots of people are, that because we believe in America, the good side of America. Has enough been done to avoid another steal from happening? I mean, you must, Trump and co must be extremely aware of this, you know. And he's, you know, I saw one list on your Twitter account, you know, eliminate early voting, mandatory paper ballots, mandatory voter ID, and so on. But how are these things are going to be affected? I mean, it's so much bureaucracy involved, and you've got the Democrats against you in the cities.
Well, you also have the organization, the way America is organized as governments. You have the states have the ultimate authority upon what happens within their boundaries. The Constitution keeps us in line as far as what you can and cannot do as government and as citizens. But individual states have their own constitution and their own rules. And it's these what we call blue states that are trying to eliminate voter ID. Today, I not only had to show my voter ID card, but I had to show a valid state-issued picture ID. I had to sign, and my signature was compared with my signature on file. And I had to sign a little affidavit electronically that stated that I understood that, you know, not voting in my precinct or misrepresenting my identity was punishable by 5 years in prison and $2,000 fine. That's the way it should be. Now, that's not the way it is in many states. New York's trying to abolish all voter ID. Just walk in and vote, folks. It's perfectly okay. Vote often, vote many. No.
And that, they're, of course, Democratic states, and they're the ones accused of the election steal. Okay, I'm afraid we're going to wind up there, Tim. Can you just tell the viewers where they can find your books and your website and your X account?
Please go to lettersfromprison.us. Very easy to remember. Lettersfromprison.us. All the proceeds from these books go to help these men and women and keep their families alive while they're incarcerated. You can go to j6patriotnews.com or find us j6patriotnews on X. And follow every day. We keep you updated on what's happening with these prisoners. We post their letters as they come out. We basically give you all the information, how to get involved, how to help. And our message, not only for Americans, but for everybody across the continents, is we're facing a great evil. Don't do nothing.
Okay. Well, Tim Rivers, the excellent author of the American Gulag Chronicles, who is showing us the twisted side of American democracy and all the people who've been jailed for protesting against the election steal in an entirely peaceful way and jailed incredibly for saving people's lives. I mean, it's unbelievable. Anyway, great to have you on, and maybe we can have you on again sometime. Thank you very much, Tim Rivers. This is Pelle Neroth-Taylor Show on TNT Radio. On for a quick break.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
I'm Belinda, and this is Willard, and we were adopted in 2021. When we first met Todd, he was singing a song, and I was like, wow, look at this kid with the biggest smile, and he has a big heart to match.
The energy you give Todd, you get it back from Todd.
Yeah.
Todd's a joy.
Yes,
Todd's really is a great joy.
I love him. You and you.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Deconstructing PSYOPs, propaganda, and mainstream media garbage. Pelle Neroth-Taylor on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to this Pelle Neroth-Taylor show on this spring afternoon. We've got Mats Nilsson as our next guest. He's a newshand author, traveler, conditional pacifist with 15 years of government service. He's a writer and commentator and frequent guest on TNT. He's based in Sweden, as I am, actually. And we will talk about the security situation in Northern Europe, which is tense. Welcome to the show, Mats.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So, Mats, what we've got, you follow Swedish affairs even more closely than I do, is the Baltic neighbors of Sweden are talking big, making big words, and they have small armies. You know, these countries were let into NATO, you know, and as far as I can tell, They're not security producers, they're security consumers. I mean, they're taking out their ancient resentment on the Russians and trying to bring us all into it, you know. And so you've got Kaja Kallas saying, well, we don't have to, she's the prime minister of Estonia, who's saying, well, we don't have to worry about Russia's red lines and Putin's nuclear weapon. That's just blackmail. Well, F around and find out, I say. And then you've got the Lithuanians saying, well, we're going to send an army into Ukraine and start World War III, and they don't care about that. What is Sweden doing about this? The Swedes have always supported the Balts. Kristersson, the Swedish prime minister, seems to be, well, I mean, he's not going to send troops now, but what's the feel there? What do you think's going on?
Well, I think it's, from the Baltic states, I think it's just a lot of hot air. I think they're pandering to a local audience. The Baltic electorate enjoy when their leaders play tough and give a large bark, even though they are small dogs as countries come. And what's kind of worrying is that the Finns have been opening up to providing support, military support on the ground in Ukraine. Because the Finns have historically always been wary of their Russian neighbor. They've always held a cool head, and they've always been well prepared to defend against Russia. If there's any country that could stand up against Russia within the NATO Union, it's definitely the Finns. They never demobilized after the end of the Cold War. They basically kept their military structure intact, and as a nation, they will be able to put up a staunch resistance if attacked. Now, what's worrying is that the Finns are suddenly starting to talk about going on the offensive. And that, in my view, is more of a serious escalation in a very dangerous rhetoric. Sweden, as the new kid on the block within NATO, of course, is going to do everything to try and prove themselves, being the goody-two-shoes in the class and saying yes to anything that NATO will ask us to do, be it to improve our healthcare facilities in order to take mass casualty events, be it build new roads. We will just go along with whatever the bigger players in NATO says. So I don't think we will not influence policy. We will just follow policy, whatever Germany, Poland, and France decides upon. That's my take on it.
Poland, I mean, seems to be more caught. I used to be married to a Polish woman. I mean, now they're very, very, you know, aggressive, but they seem to be more cautious than I thought. I think that Sikorsky said, you know, maybe we should send troops to, but the Duda, the prime president, seems to be quite cautious, and the Polish military don't want to go in. The Germans have said definitely no. The Italians have said no. Even the British, who are very hawkish, as you know, have kind of said no. So maybe the Swedes will go with that for the moment. But do you think, I mean, you're in Stockholm and I'm not, and I think you follow these things much more closely. The Swedes are the goody-two-shoes of world politics. And during the Palmer era, they were going to be more neutral and better than anyone else, you know, better than either the moral conscience of the world and all that, pro-African and all that. And now, I think, is the Swedish self-model, how Sweden's going to fan out in the next 10 or 20 years, to become some kind of fortress and logistics hub for the rest of NATO? You know, are Swedish engineering companies salivating at the possibility of building airfields, air bases, I don't know, military bases, so that Sweden can be the center? And are the Swedish military intelligence sort of planning, well, we are going to be the eavesdroppers for the whole world. We're all in for this. NATO's going to survive. We're going to be the best, you know, friends of the Americans and the British, because we've watched their TV programs for decades, and we want to have our own little, we love Battle of Britain. We love Churchill. You know, I mean, unfortunately, I think I speak both Swedish and English. The Swedes are the ultimate fanboys of all the British propaganda that's launched about the good war, good Second World War, and Swedes have lapped it all up. And there's a big masculinity deficit there. Some other thinks, well, we want to have our war, and we're going to do it against Russia, which is our ancient enemy. Do you feel there's some of that? Just to summarize, do you think the Swedes are going to go all in as a kind of NATO hub in the next 10 years? Is that their model for how to develop?
Most certainly, I believe it to be so, because we have historically, the Swedish membership in NATO is basically just a conferment of previous facts. Sweden has been the best non-member member of NATO since basically 1956, when the Social Democratic government made a secretive deal with America that we would open up our airfields and such in case of a Soviet-NATO war back during the Cold War era. And we have always taken part in the eavesdropping against the Soviet Union. There were even a few Swedish planes shot down by the Soviet Union due to the fact that we ventured too close to Soviet airspace, eavesdropping on them. And we've also been a part for many years as an unofficial partner of the Five Eyes eavesdropping group. So I think we will become the ears, and we will also, due to the DCA agreement with the United States, become a major logistics hub, because we're better placed than Norway, and we're a bit further from the eventual front lines as Finland and the Baltic states might become. So we are to become a major logistics hub. And reading the DCA agreement, which I did quite recently, it's obvious that we're giving up quite a few amounts of military areas for the Americans to procure and use for their shady comings and goings and wheelings and dealings. So most certainly Sweden will become a valued member, and we will do just about everything to be experienced as a trusted new member.
All at a time when people are talking about NATO falling apart. I mean, we just don't know how the next 10 years are going to look if Trump is going to try and sabotage NATO. But I just want to say, I mean, what happened to the NATO resistance in Sweden? Here was a country which was, I grew up, had the SIPRI, Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. We've got the Peace Prize in Oslo, but Sweden was always linked to it because of most of the other prizes come through Stockholm. And many Swedes, and I remember the 1980s when I grew up, there were peace marches from Paris to Stockholm and Stockholm to Paris, Paris to Minsk. And the Swedes never stopped talking about peace. Now, it's impossible to get people onto my show. They don't have the internet connections, or they're busy repainting their homes, you know, because they're too busy to talk peace, you know. Where are the demonstrations? I attended a peace demonstration in Gothenburg. Six people turned up, you know, and that's up from three a few months previously. So they told me, we've actually doubled the number of supporters of peace, yeah, to six people. Anyway, what do you think? Is there a bigger scene in Stockholm, bigger peace scene where you're...
I wouldn't say that. When the NATO flag was raised in front of the parliament 2 days ago, I think it was now, there were, I think, 16 people protesting across the water by the castle. So that was about it. From a proud country of peace marches, where it was down to 16 people protesting the NATO membership. And I think it was an opportune... The powers that be obviously knew that this was an opportune moment to quickly change the opinion of the Swedish people. And the key to this was changing the Social Democratic Party's view on NATO. Once that had been achieved, it was a walk in the park to get the parliament to pass the law. And the interesting thing is that now we're members. The Swedish government has announced that they will make a funding for information to the Swedish citizenry what a NATO membership will mean for Sweden and its citizens. So after the fact that we are members, now the Swedish government will be paying money for an so-called information, I call it propaganda campaign, to explain NATO to the citizens. So it was an opportune moment. The powers that be seized this moment, used the fear, the old fear of Russia and the Russians, and easily got Sweden into NATO. And now we're stuck.
I mean, the media are unbelievably propagandistic, aren't they? I mean, it's again, yes. I don't buy them, but when I go do my supermarket shopping in the evenings, you know, I pass by the tabloids Expressen and Aftonbladet. And the Swedes trust their press. So one day there'll be a headline about how to avoid hemorrhoids or something, or how to improve your health. And so it's this security. People read these papers, and the Swedish are newspaper reading public. And it's like a friend, a trusted friend. They still see the newspapers as that. And then the next day they say Putin is dying of cancer, or the secret plot against. And not a single one of their headlines has turned out to be true. It's all straight from MI6. Propaganda center in London, you know. I mean, they're complete assets of the Western British intelligence nexus, and they're not ashamed of it, you know. But I guess it's a lot of people believe it, and maybe they believe that Russia's so weak that, you know, Sweden can afford to join NATO. Do you want to just say a few minutes about the propaganda, and then we go to the Nord Stream thing, which you just have a very interesting, you watched a very interesting documentary, but tell us about the propaganda from your perspective.
Well, I think I can understand that the tabloids go with propaganda. I mean, the tabloids have killed Putin off with cancer, I think, 5 or 6 times, and they've declared that Crimea will be liberated about equally as many times. Obviously, it's just, you know, as we said, propaganda. The worrying thing is that even Swedish public service has fallen to this propagandistic view of the Russian-Ukraine war. And what I mean by this is that it's quite often that the public service has jumped to conclusions based solely on what Ukraine has said about an event. And then, as you know, many times a few weeks later, it's been disproven, and it's actually been perhaps a Ukrainian missile that's gone awry and caused the explosion. And then when I contact public service and say, you know, this headline is now wrong because it's been proven this wasn't a Russian missile, they say, oh, well, you know, we changed in the text, but, you know, we might keep the headline because Russia, well, they normally lie. So you never know. So even though it's been disproven in a specific case, public service still say we're keeping the headline because we believe that Russia habitually lies, even though it's not so. So I think it's hard for the public service journalists to be able to accept the fact that even Ukraine deals in propaganda. So we are.
And also, I think they've been very much promoting this idea that Ukraine is winning, but in fact, where they're losing, they're being slaughtered in their hundreds of thousands. And of course, that gives false encouragement to NATO supporters. Just one more push, and Russia, this country, this gas station with nukes, you know, Upper Volta with missiles, whatever they say, is going to fall. So it's a risk-free proposition. And now they're suddenly faced with this world's most powerful nation on their doorstep, and the Americans may be pulling out. Whoops, you know. But anyway, do you have any contacts on Swedish television? I mean, do they actually believe the stuff they're telling, or are they just worried about their mortgages and their families? They got this job.
I believe they're worried about the fact that it's not socially acceptable to take a different view. It's just the iron law of oligarchy. It works in any organization, not only political organizations, but any organization, that if you voice dissent and say, well, you know, perhaps this is just Ukrainian propaganda, you will be questioned, and you will also be questioned by senior commentators on the different newspapers. And since it's such a small community in Sweden, you will be very quickly placed out in the cold. And I don't think anyone wants that. So it's also a part of wanting to belong. I've lost friends over the fact that I'm not going with the Ukrainian narrative. Friends have contacted me and said, you're not welcome anymore. But for me, it's not my work, so I can take that. But within the journalism core, it's a problem.
Sorry, just interrupt. We just got 3 minutes left. So, I mean, you watched this latest film on Nord Stream, which is something that it was very close to Swedish territory, and the Swedish ships were involved or flying over the area. And then mysteriously, they can't conclude who it was after 16 months. What did that documentary that you watched say, and would you recommend it to TNT's viewers?
Yes, I would most definitely recommend it, because what it proves is, or what it says is, that the US, the UK, no one has conducted any official investigation into who's responsible. And it's very surprising that such a country as the US and the UK, with the largest spy networks, the best technology, including satellites, does not know officially who's behind the pipeline destruction. And it only proves that the saboteur of the Nord Stream pipelines had a very limited time frame to install the explosives. So, I mean, you can easily narrow down who the suspects are. And why you should watch it is that it gives to mind that perhaps we should be looking towards the UK and Norway. And that the questions are, why were these people in the area? Who had the regular patrols? And what was Sweden's role in all this? So it's definitely a documentary to watch. I highly recommend it, because the Nord Stream is a huge cover-up. And the one thing we know is Russia didn't do it. Because if Russia had done it, or if there had been anything to build a case on that Russia did it, the US and the mainstream media would have been on it. So whoever did it,
Mats Nilsson,
we'll never know.
Thank you very much for your appearance on my show. You've summarized things very brilliantly. And I think that NATO is run on a mafia principle. So they wanted to involve Norway and Sweden. So in the same way that you get people involved in a crime so that they can't back out. Anyway, we would love to have you on again, as usual. Mats Nilsson, you can find him on Twitter and X, and on this show very soon. Thank you very much, Max, talking about NATO and Sweden. This is Pelle Neroth-Taylor on the TNT show. We'll be back after the break for a second hour with two brilliant guests. Stay with us.